Hello and welcome to Therapy Entrepreneurs and Leaders of Color. I'm your host, Tamiko Faison. This podcast is dedicated to therapy entrepreneurs and leaders of color and supporting them in their roles all around the world. Our guest today is
Kendra Glasgow,
MPHOTRL. She is an occupational therapist and recently transitioned to her role as a research analyst with the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Innovation. We need her. Prior to joining CMMI, Kendra worked as a clinician in a variety of healthcare settings, ranging from a skilled nursing facility to an inpatient psychiatric unit. She is now affecting change at a systemic level through her work implementing one of CMMI's largest voluntary payment models, the Bundled Payments for Care Improved Advancement, BPCI Advanced Model. The BPCI Advanced Model promotes care coordination and value over volume among acute care hospitals and physician group practices across the nation. Kendra obtained her Master of Science in Occupational Therapy degree at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, and her Master of Public Health degree from the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. And we have to do a woohoo on Johns Hopkins as well. She has been a member of the roster of accreditation evaluators for the Accreditation Council for Occupational Therapy Education since 2018. Welcome, Kendra.
Thank you. So good to, chat with you. It's been a while.
It has been a long time. We both went to UNC, and I remember when you were back in North Carolina, and I've watched you on LinkedIn and how your career has really taken off in different areas, and was really just interested in exactly what you were doing over there with Medicare. And I think this is an area that, we practice and it impacts our practice a lot, but we're not always educated. And I know sometimes when I have people on the show, when I ask them, they say, well, I don't know if I'm a leader. I don't know if I'm, a person that qualifies to be on the show. And this show is about showcasing therapy entrepreneurs and leaders of color, and leaders take many forms. And so I believe that you are an everyday leader, and you're definitely doing something that's groundbreaking, and glad that you are here with us to spend about 15, 20 minutes to talk about this new role, and so that we can be educated and also support you in that role. So if we can start off, if you can tell us about yourself and how you became interested in OT.
Okay. So I am a daughter of two Jamaican immigrant parents. So I'm a first generation American. And I think, like most children of immigrant parents, the value of education was strongly instilled in us. And I grew up with my mom being, my biggest role model. She was actually the breadwinner for our household. And my dad actually stayed home with me and my three younger brothers. So I knew, early on that I wanted to, be part of a helping profession, just because I knew how much value my mom found in her work as a pediatrician and how she seemed to be excited every day when she went into work. And I actually thought I was going to go to medical school up until my sophomore year of college. And that's when I took a course called Intro to Health Professions. And that's when I first heard about OT, and it just sounded so holistic. It sounded like it really focused on the whole person rather than just diagnosis. So I was curious about OT, since that class. So I, did some exploration, and the more I learned about OT, the more I wanted to be a part of that profession. So I actually went to OT school right after undergrad.
So interesting that you say that you learned about it in a health profession, intro to health profession. And so for listeners, if you are looking at ways to recruit underrepresented groups, this seems to be a common response that, maybe you are on this track for medical school, you never heard of OT, and then you, you know, have someone to present, or you attend a workshop or course or class where you're introduced to multiple health professions, and then OT resonates with you.
Mm-hmm. And, oh, sorry, that's my dog. And what's funny is that the person actually, oh, and grab him.
This is real life. I have three dogs.
Nope. Oh, do you?
I do. We have three dogs, a parrot, five fish tanks. We want to get a chicken. That's what my younger son wants. He wants a chicken.
Oh, wow.
No problem. Your That's dog is welcome to be part of the podcast.
I think that's his signal that he wants to be part of it. But I was just going to say that the person that presented at OT was actually an African-American male. So I actually also thought that OT was going to be like more diverse of a field than it really was. So it just goes to show you like how like, you know, who you see represent the field can, you know, make such an impression.
That's a very good point. Very good point. We need representation. It does matter. So that leads into the second question, where our, you know, our profession right now is not very diverse. We are making great steps towards increasing diversity. But curious, with the lack of diversity and with you going in, you know, you see this African-American male present and you're thinking this looks holistic. It's probably a diverse profession because an African-American male did the presentation, and then you become an OT and you realize, wait a minute, it's not as diverse as I thought. How has that impacted you as an occupational therapist and as a leader?
I think it's definitely, you know, brought some anxiety and also just like concern. I think that I saw the importance of, you know, seeing people that look like you when I was actually doing psycho T in Baltimore, because primarily my, you know, patients were Black. And I was just noticing that, you know, I was often the only person of color that was part of their team. And it was just, you know, kind of clear that, you know, there's definitely distrust because of, you know, history when, you know, your providers are all a different race from you. So I noticed that some of the patients really, you know, really connected with me, and I was sometimes the only provider that they really trust. So, like, I would often get a lot more information about their actual stories than, you know, the doctor or nurse would, just because I look like them and they felt comfortable confiding in me.
So from a client perspective, you know, the people that you were serving in the psych facility, it was positive. From a professional standpoint, how was that, you being the, you know, typically the only person of color as a professional?
Yeah.
With the other professionals?
Yeah. And I would say that, you know, sometimes, and I'm sure sometimes it's self-inflicted, but like I think I felt a lot of pressure to be like the sole voice for my race, because I was often either the only Black OT or the only Black OT student. So I, you know, you constantly kind of feel like you're under like a microscope, and you're having to like, to kind of be everyone's symbol for what a African American female is. So I feel like it's, you know, it definitely is anxiety provoking, and it definitely was a growing experience. And I actually was, oh, go ahead.
You can go ahead.
Well, so I had an experience adjuncting, and I was, you know, kind of bothered to see that there still isn't that many Black OGs, you know, when you look at a, you know, a class or a program, and the two African-American students that were in the class that I was teaching, I think that it was, you know, positive for them to see, you know, someone in, you know, a profession. But at the same time, I like the faculty is, you know, was pretty much all white, and I know that there's, I think that they can probably relate to how I felt too when I was an OG student.
Yeah, that is definitely an issue. And I think some programs that are more diverse, there's a move more towards holistic admissions and looking at some of the barriers with some OT programs, but there are still programs where they're like, there's zero Black people or one Black person. I had an OT reach out to me, an OT student. She's the only Black student in her program, her total program. And it's 2020. Yeah. So that is unfortunate. But I do hope that the programs who are using holistic admissions and have increased representation educate other programs to let them know that there's things that we can do, and we can make changes if we look at how we're admitting, how we're recruiting, how we're supporting once we recruit, and not just students, but also faculty. As you said, that makes a difference.
Right.
As these programs embrace these initiatives, I hope that others see it, they educate others, and others follow these new models. So mm-hmm. It didn't stop you. You said anxiety provoking. I know exactly what you mean. I can completely relate. You know, your heart's racing sometimes. You're sitting in a room and you're looking around. And you're like, okay, how's this going to go? And, you know, but you do it, you end up doing it afraid. And obviously the anxiety did not stop you. So can we talk a little bit more about your leadership roles, this role with, you know, working with, I hope I say the initials right, was it CCMI?
CMMI.
Okay, it's close.
Yeah, there's so many acronyms in the government. It's unbelievable. You want me to tell about my role there?
Yes, tell us about your leadership roles and what you're doing with CMMI.
Okay. So I was just going to say that I think that, you know, my background had a lot to do with me wanting to still persevere despite, you know, some of the obstacles I faced, you know, just being a minority in this field. And I always thought that OT could and should have a strong role in public or population health due to, you know, our values and our understanding that the environment plays a huge role in, you know, a person's function and quality of life. So I knew eventually I wanted to transition to a more systemic setting. I just didn't know, you know, how I was going to do it. So, you know, I decided to get my MPH. And then I did a lot of networking. I was pretty open-minded in terms of like where I, you know, was willing to work. I think there's a lot of, push to work in the government just because of, you know, the benefits, you know, work-life balance, and also job security. And CMMI happened to be a government agency that was, you know, local to me. So I actually got connected with another OT that also works at CMMI. And, you know, he, you know, kind of, you know, taught me, like, you know, the strategies for like applying to the government and what things to kind of stress in your resume, because it's just a whole nother world in terms of like, you know, trying to apply and get in. So it took a lot of patience. It took a lot of like, you know, informational interviews of people that worked. And so the more I learned about it, the more I was like, you know, I didn't think I would ever work for like an insurance company. I think as a clinician, they're almost like seen as like the enemy. But, you know, the more I learned about it, the more I came curious about it. So, you know, I was very excited when I finally got a position. So I got here late September. What's nice about the Innovation Center is it's one of the newest parts of CMS, because it was one of the results of the ACA in 2010. And its sole purpose is to, you know, transition our healthcare system from, you know, just paying for volume to paying for value and quality care, which I think should always have been the case, but it's, you know, it's still like a relatively new thing. So, you know, basically, you know, the Innovation Center is just testing, well, it's developing and testing different payment and healthcare delivery models for Medicare and Medicaid beneficiaries. And I think our impact goes beyond just those beneficiaries, just because, like, I remember practicing, like, you know, our managers would always say, you know, Medicare is the gold standard. So whatever you need to do for a Medicare patient, you should also be doing for, you know, anyone else. Because a lot of times other payers will, you know, eventually follow whatever Medicare is doing. So I have to admit, I'm still learning my role, but I would say it's rewarding in a different way, because, you know, you're not getting that immediate gratification, and your patients are different. Like, I would say, like, now my patients are like the hospitals and the physician groups that are participating in these different models. But, you know, that will translate to them helping, you know, the beneficiaries, which, you know, used to be my patients when I was working more as a clinician. But I still feel like I'm practicing OT. And I just want more people to know that, like, we're not just limited to clinical work.
I love what you're saying, because We have a unique skill set that can be applied to working with individuals, groups, and populations. That language has changed in our practice framework in terms of our value. And I just say hats off to you to continuing to move forward and looking for a place for OT. And you said earlier, like, that a lot of times y'all are considered the enemy because people are afraid of, you know, insurance and audits, and do you have to pay money back? And there's all these horror stories and myths.
Yeah.
Well, I think you'll help debunk some of those as you educate, as well as with that OTD capstone. I don't know if we have time to go into detail with it, but it would be great to have a link, if there is a link, explaining this OTD capstone, working with your program. I would love to be able to put that in the bio for this show today.
Okay.
So how have you personally overcome the challenges? You know, we mentioned anxiety, but, you know, you pushed forward, you contributed at the psych facility, you pursued a degree in public health, you connected with someone, and you just continue to push forward until you landed this position, which I think is huge for occupational therapy. But how did you do it? Like, what helped you? Or what advice could you give to someone based on your experiences and being able to get to where you are now?
Well, I think that, you know, having people to talk to that can kind of relate to what you're going through has been, you know, pretty helpful. I think having like a support system is so helpful and so important when you're going through things like that, because it's so easy to just hold everything in. But I know, you know, that does not work for me. So I would just say, like, you know, having someone that you can talk to about, you know, what you're going through. And then, like, you know, just having people that are, you know, that are encouraging and, you know, like, whether it's like your parents or your friends. And I would say, like, we have the tendency to, like, minimize our accomplishments and then inflate our mistakes. Like, trying to do the opposite of that, you know, thinking about, you know, what you've accomplished so far, I think also makes a difference.
That's so true, that we minimize our accomplishments and then we, like, magnify our mistake. You can have 20 good reviews and one negative review, and then all of a sudden you're just honed in on this negative review. And so I love that you said switch that, and that's a mindset thing, and it certainly helps with having people in your circle who are supportive. And so having mentors as professionals, and then for these programs that we were talking about earlier, having mentorship for these students, particularly if you have a low percentage of underrepresented minorities, they need support. There's things that they may be holding in, just like you said, you had experienced before, and you realize it doesn't work. I don't think it works really for anyone to hold in concerns and any anxieties and experiences that you're having that are stressful, to just hold it in and not have anyone to discuss that with. So we're coming to the close of our show. This was a shorter show due to some time constraints this morning, but I am so glad that you took some time out of your schedule, Kendra, as you are learning a new role and sharing with us what you're doing with CMMI. And I hope everyone takes a look at this, because you're probably affected by it. Insurance, I mean, the majority of OT services are still paid for by insurance, and we need to be educated about what is happening, how it is changing. And thankfully, we have a
representative who is available to help us understand.
Any last pearls of wisdom, Kendra, that you would like to leave with us?
I guess, you know, don't be afraid to network. I'm an introvert, so, you know, I kind of learned the hard way that there's no getting around it. So, you know, the more you do it, the more comfortable you get. And, you know, I would say that, you know, when you see people that look like you, you know, doing things or having these opportunities, it's inspiring. So, you know, I guess network and seek out mentors that you can really, you know, relate to.
Mm-hmm. Pushing yourself to network. I'm introvert too, Kendra, contrary to popular belief. I am 100% introvert, but networking is extremely, extremely powerful. I mean, it helped lead you to the position you're in. So listeners, if you are trying to grow and you're an introvert, or you're reserved or concerned about networking, push yourself to connect with others, because you may be surprised at where it will lead you. So that is our show for today. Again, Kendra, thank you for taking time out of your schedule to be with us. Listeners, don't forget to share and follow. And until next time, thank you.
Thank you.